Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as The New York Times, The News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Couple of banning questions today. Question number one, why on this very day, back in 1959, did the BBC ban the coaster song Charlie Brown? Was it A, because of the word spitball? Was it B, because the BBC feared a lawsuit from a cartoon strip copyright holder? Was it C, because the song was regarded as unpatriotic? Or was it D, because of excessive swearing in the lyrics? The banning of Charlie Brown. Why did the BBC do that anyway? And question number two, why were the Beach Boys prohibited from a plane at the National 4th of July concert in Washington, D.C. Mall that they were scheduled for? Was it A, because the members of the band had done plagiarizing of lyrics? Was it B, because they were accused of communicating with the Russians? Was it C, because they had encouraged smoking marijuana? Or was it D, because the Secretary of Interior believed they would attract a bad crowd? The Beach Boy banning. Why was it done anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of April the 3rd. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1859, that Daniel Emmett introduced I Wish I Was in Dixie's Land. About 2 years later, that song became the Civil War song of the Confederacy, and that happened today, back in 1859. And it was 41 years ago today, 1985, that an estimated 5,000 radio stations around the world simultaneously played the song We Are the World. The Good Friday broadcast of We Are the World was aimed at global unity in helping African famine relief efforts. Country singer Waylon Jennings walked out of the We Are the World recording session. He left in a huff because of a dispute over adding Swahili lyrics to the song, reportedly stating, "Ain't no good old boy sings in Swahili." While Jennings departed, he is still credited for participating in the chorus. And that was back in 1985 today. Bach's Sheep May Safely Graze introduces our classical music news. Spring highlights written by Emily Moss, WCPE's Quarter Notes, Spring 2026 issue. Holy Week, Sunday, March 29 through Sunday, April 5th. On Friday, April 3rd at 8 p.m., join us for a powerful and immersive presentation of Johann Sebastian Bach's St. Matthew Passion, performed in its entirety by the RIAS Chamber Choir and Academy für Alte Musik, Berlin. Widely regarded as one of Bach's most profound and moving sacred works, the St. Matthew Passion weaves together scripture, poetry, and music to tell the story of the Passion with extraordinary emotional depth and spiritual intensity. This acclaimed performance brings clarity, intimacy, and dramatic force to Bach's monumental score, offering listeners a rare opportunity to experience the funds and full sweep of this masterpiece in one uninterrupted broadcast. Passover, evening of Wednesday, April 1st through Thursday, April 9th. Every evening during Passover, we will feature a sacred Jewish piece to create a reflective musical journey for all. Hear the luminous harp arrangement of Dayanu by Rachel Van Voorhees, a melody that embodies gratitude, remembrance, and celebration. The program is also enriched with additional works inspired by Jewish themes and heritage, including compositions by Max Bruch and Ernest Bloch. Join us as we commemorate Passover through music that reflects freedom, faith, and the enduring power of tradition. That's WCPE 89.7 on your FM radio dial, now through April 9th, in recognition of these two religious holidays. Aretha Franklin's Respect introduces our blues and soul music news. Legendary 70s singer with two number one hits would have turned 84 today. Aretha Franklin was a pioneering voice in American soul music. This is published on March 25, 2026, Jack Walters, mensjournal.com. The key points. Aretha Franklin was renowned as the queen of soul music with global acclaim. Her hits like Respect and collaborations earned top chart positions and Grammy recognition. Franklin performed until 2017 and her legacy soared after her 2018 death. Born on March 25, 1942, in Memphis, Tennessee, Aretha Franklin was widely recognized as the queen of soul music in America. She was one of the few soul singers who managed to market her music to a wider audience, gaining international recognition for her dazzling vocals and catchy songwriting. Franklin was signed to Columbia Records at just 18 years old after having spent the majority of her childhood in a gospel choir in Detroit. Though it took a while for her professional career to take off, she recorded plenty of successful soul albums throughout the 1960s, such as Lady Soul and Aretha Now. Franklin landed her first top 10 single in 1967, shortly after leaving Columbia Records for Atlantic Records. I Never Loved a Man the Way I Loved You was recorded in just one day and skyrocketed to number 9 on the Billboard Hot 100, introducing listeners around the world to Franklin's soulful voice for the first time. Franklin's first number 1 single came later that year with Respect, the song that opened today's program. Originally recorded by Otis Redding, Franklin's cover was a much more energetic and soulful version that shot to number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100 and remains her most popular song today. The singer continued to gain international recognition with singles Chain of Fools and Ain't No Way, for which she took home the Grammy Award for Best Female R&B Vocal Performance. Though Franklin's career saw a commercial downfall in the mid-70s, she remained a cultural icon and one of the most powerful voices in the soul genre. It wasn't until Franklin paired up with Wham! Frontman George Michael for a powerful duet of I Knew You Were Waiting For Me, that she found herself back at the top of the charts, landing her second and final number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100. Franklin continued releasing new music and performing classic hits until 2017, when she was forced to step back due to worsening health problems. She gave her final performance at the 25th anniversary gala for the Elton John AIDS Foundation on November 7, 2017. She died less than a year later from a pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor, surrounded by her friends and family.
You're an all-star, get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star, get the show on, get paid.
And all that winners is gold.
Only shooting stars break the mold.
Smash Mouth introduces our rock, pop, and hip-hop music news. It's March Madness Music is the title, a playlist of the best basketball songs of all time, written by Jim Harrington, The Mercury News, 29th of March, 2026. There's no shortage of songs about baseball. Indeed, the Library of Congress estimates that more than 1,400 tunes have been written about our national pastime. Yet, it's an entirely different story when it comes to other sports, which have received comparatively little attention from songwriters. That's perhaps most surprising when it comes to basketball, given its long and synergetic relationship with hip-hop. Sure, there are a number of well-known references to certain players popping up in rap tunes, but songs fully addressing and inspired by the game? Not so much. With the eyes of the sports world turning to San Jose, which is hosting the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament Sweet 16 at SAP Center on March 26 and 28, we figured the time was right to fix our attention on the basketball music over and see what we could find. We weren't looking for anthems played at basketball games or even necessarily songs recorded by NBA players, but rather numbers that lyrically address what happens on and around the court. The result was relatively small in number, especially compared to baseball, but impressive in quality. So here are top three of our Sweet 16 soundtrack, ranking the greatest basketball songs of all time. And at number one, Basketball by Curtis Blow, 1984. In general, we feel that all music fans are entitled to their own opinions. That said, however, anyone who picks anything other than this rap classic as the greatest basketball song of all time is just plain wrong. Released more than 40 years ago, Blow's anthem remains the definitive hoop song. The beat bounces like a rock taken up the court by Earl the Pearl Monroe, one of the many legends of the game mentioned in this song, but mostly it's about Blow's flow as he moves through lyrics that are wonderfully straightforward and simple, selling us all why basketball is such a great sport. The key lyric, "I like slam dunks, take it to the hoop. My favorite play is the alley-oop." And then at number two, the song Basketball Jones by Cheech and Chong from 1973. Sung with a memorably false falsetto, Cheech Marin unfolds the tale of Tyrone, as in Tyrone, shoelaces, and what may well be the funniest skit this comic duo ever created. The music is so over the top, surrounding Marin's increasingly strained falsetto, with stadium rock-style instrumentation and a mix of harmonies from female backing vocalists and Tommy Chong's droning voice. Thanks to a studio scheduling coincidence, a number of music stars working on a separate project wound up contributing to the song, including George Harrison, Billy Preston, Carol King, and many more. And the lyrics are comic genius throughout. Yet there is one particular passage that surely ranks as the greatest lyric in the history of basketball songs. And really, we might be underselling it a bit here. That key lyric? "That basketball was like a basketball to me." And then at number three, "He Got Game," Public Enemy featuring Stephen Stills, 1998. Chuck D once again proves he's an MC for the ages on the soundtrack to the Spike Lee joint of the same name. The album, which doubles as P.E.'s sixth studio offering, is full of winners. Yet the way the title track uses the game as a jumping-off point to address social and political concerns is truly superb. Plus, the groove, based on a sample of Buffalo Springfield's For What It's Worth, is the silkiest of cool. The fact that the track actually includes Stills, the Buffalo Springfield icon who penned For What It's Worth, makes the whole thing a slam dunk. The key lyric? "It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but damn the game if it don't mean nothing." So check out the full 329-26 article to experience the entire list of the best basketball songs. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, why on this very day back in 1959 did the BBC ban the Coasters song Charlie Brown? Was it A, because of the word spitball? Was it B, because the BBC feared a lawsuit from a cartoon strip copyright holder? Was it C, because the song was regarded as unpatriotic? Or was it D, because of excessive swearing in the lyrics? As noted in OnThisDay.com, the BBC banned the song because of the word spitball. Answer A is the correct answer. An AI overview adds, in 1959, the BBC banned the Coasters' hit song, Charlie Brown, because the lyrics contained the word spitball. This BBC deemed the reference the high school theme song as potentially encouraging disruptive behavior, though the ban was reversed 2 weeks later due to listener protest. The song humorously depicts a school troublemaker with lyrics referencing school antics, specifically, "Why is everybody always picking on me? You're gonna get a spanking. or you'll throw a spitball and get kicked out of school. The BBC, which was very conservative in its broadcasting standards during the late 1950s, considered the word spitball inappropriate or unacceptable for broadcast. The band's label, Atco Records, contested the ban. The ban was relatively short-lived, with the BBC reconsidering its position within a few weeks. The song was one of many popular tracks restricted by the BBC during that era, which often banned music deemed, quote-unquote, vulgar or unsuitable for listeners. And the answer to our second question, why were the Beach Boys prohibited from playing a scheduled 4th of July concert on the Washington, D.C. Mall? Was it A, because members of the band were found guilty of plagiarizing lyrics? Was it B, because they were accused of communicating with the Russians? Was it C, because they had encouraged smoking marijuana? Or was it D, because the Secretary of Interior believed they would attract a bad crowd? Correct answer? Answer D. Ronald Reagan's Secretary of the Interior, James Watt, believed that the Beach Boys would attract the wrong type of audience to Washington, D.C. As noted in a 4/6/2017 article in Smithsonian Magazine, on April 6, 1983, then Secretary of the Interior, James Watt, announced that no rock bands would be playing at the 4th of July concert on the Washington Mall. This came as a surprise to many, particularly Beach Boys fans, since the band had performed at both the 1980 and the 1981 celebrations. According to Bob Cannon of Entertainment Weekly in 1993, Watt, with mentioning the boys by name, unabashedly announced that all rock bands attracted the wrong element and opted for a wholesome program with Wayne Newton. "We're not going to encourage drug abuse and alcoholism," Watt sniffed, "as was done in the past." Watt's decision was met with outcry by everybody, from the boys themselves to Nancy Reagan, Cannon writes, and the White House phone lines were crowded with calls. After it came out that First Lady Nancy Reagan was a Beach Boys fan, White House staffers awarded Watt a plaster foot with a hole in it, emblematic of having shot himself in the foot. Lead singer Mike Love said the Beach Boys, by now a vintage act, were entirely wholesome. "We sing about patriotic themes, like surfing USA," he said. As the Secretary of the Interior had wanted, Wayne Newton played what was a rainy 4th of July gathering. Although the gig was interrupted by thunderstorms, Newton played a dozen songs and made no direct reference to the controversy. After the incident, Watt said he hadn't even known who the Beach Boys were. "If it wasn't Amazing Grace or the Star-Spangled Banner, I didn't recognize her songs," he said. No word on what he did with the plaster statue commemorating his unwise choices. It wasn't the only moment in his career where his tone deafness would have consequences. Watt was forced to resign just months later after he made racist, sexist, and ableist remarks. So let's close out today's program with a specific song by the Beach Boys that was banned over just one word. As noted in a July 8, 2025 article by Alex Hopper in AmericanSongwriter.com titled, "Paul McCartney's Favorite Beach Boys Song Faced a Radio Ban." To most people, the Beach Boys' God Only Knows comes across as an earnest expression of love and perhaps of faith. Brian Wilson often sang about his connection to a higher power. He wasn't always explicit about the beliefs, but he wasn't afraid to venture into that side of himself in his songwriting. Because of this, we can interpret God Only Knows as an honest expression of praise for the love in his life. Nevertheless, controversy surrounded this beloved track. One word nearly got this song banned from the radio. In the 1960s, mentioning God in your music was a controversial idea. While many states didn't think much about the inclusion, more conservative ones and, in stride, more religious markets found Brian Wilson's title to be blasphemous. At the very least, there was enough fear of backlash in those areas that the song was banned from their radio stations entirely. Luckily, Wilson decided to take a leap of faith with the song, delivering what is known as his magnum opus. Despite several radio stations refusing to play the song, the song's success was not hindered. Even Wilson's peers were jealous of his masterpiece. Paul McCartney once deemed it his favorite Beach Boys song. "I just think it's a great song. Melody, harmonies, words, you know," McCartney once said. "I love it, you know. It's my favorite Beach Boys song. When I played it, it made me cry, and I don't quite know why," he continued elsewhere. "It wasn't necessarily the words or the music. It's just something so deep in it that there's only certain pieces of music that can do this to me." In 2014, many top artists joined forces to cover this irreplaceable song. Everyone from Elton John to Florence Welch to Wilson himself paid tribute to this Beach Boys classic. Needless to say, this song has touched many generations. Here then, God Only Knows.
Love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
So what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without.